Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Sarah Kayali, Syria researcher in the Middle East and North Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. Sarah, I'd like to concentrate on the humanitarian situation in Syria going into the ninth year of civil war.
The UN had actually stopped counting victims quite some time ago. So what we rely on in terms of figures are figures by local Syrian organizations. So, for example, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights estimates that there are over 500,000 dead. So likely that the number is actually higher. In terms of the displaced, the UNHCR maintains that there are 5.6 who have fled the country and over 6 million that are internally displaced.
What I haven't brought up is the people who have been wounded.
On this particular question, I think it's actually a very important question because these are the people who've been wounded, the people who've been traumatized are often the people who actually go uncounted. Usually the question that's being asked is how many people are in need? And in need, you have over 13 million people inside of Syria who are in need, according to humanitarians. And this means that they require support from humanitarian organizations, be it shelter, education, food, or medical assistance. The number of people who are in need far outweighs anyone's capacity to actually provide help. This is in addition to the segment of the population that's completely lost to the eyes of the public, like people who've been mentally traumatized by the war, children who are in need of psychosocial support, and others who face disabilities as a result of the conflict and being wounded in the conflict. And those, I have to say, unfortunately, receive very little attention, both from the humanitarians and the wider public. There are several organizations and UN agencies that are helping refugees outside of Syria. Inside Syria, the question becomes a lot more complicated. In areas that are held by the government, our understanding is that humanitarian organizations face restrictions on access. There's no transparency with regards to the communities, both of those internally displaced and those returning to government-held Syria. Many organizations are unable to access them or provide them with services. And it's really the Syrian government that's actually preventing these organizations from reaching populations in need, especially returnees. In areas that are held by non-state armed actors, so by anti-government groups or groups that are not affiliated with the government, the situation is somewhat easier, but equally bleak, in the sense that you have organizations that are somewhat able to work, but because, for example, in Idlib, the group that's in control is sanctioned by the UN and considered a terrorist entity, it makes it difficult for humanitarians to really serve the population in a way that's comprehensive.
You are listening to Sarah Kayali, a Syria researcher in the Middle East and North Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. There appears to be an effort by Assad to bar any future return by people who have left the country and instead give their homes or property to foreign fighters that have come into Syria to support him, whether they're Shiites and whether the refugees are Sunnis. I'm not quite sure which lines those go across. But is this true? Is he seeking to do I suppose you could call that a form of ethnic cleansing?
The funny thing is that the Syrian government and the Russians have spent a lot of effort officially calling for Syrians to return in order to be able to get reconstruction funding and the removal of sanctions. But what Human Rights Watch has documented in reality is that there are severe restrictions on access and ongoing blockage by the Syrian government of people who've attempted to return. So there are people who have tried to return to Syria based on the promises that are made by the Syrian government, only to find that they were not allowed to return. And so what we're seeing is essentially that the de facto policies of the Syrian government have indeed been to restrict and block returns of people based on criteria that they haven't made available to us. But what we know is that most of the people who've been blocked have been affiliated with or have expressed anti-Syrian government sentiments. Even if they've expressed them peacefully, they've been blocked.
Sarah Kayali, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.